Oh, hey there. You're listening to the Deadpool 2 podcast. This is Peter pretending to be Ryan Reynolds in that creepy voice he uses when he talks to the camera. Is it working? No, you don't have to say it. It's working. Welcome to Screenfish.
Peter, what are you doing?
Sorry, Steve. I didn't realize you were there.
I left the room for 2 seconds and this is what we get?
Welcome to Screenfish. Welcome to Screenfish!
Welcome to Screenfish Radio. I am so excited this week to be talking about Deadpool 2. As Ryan Reynolds says, one of the laziest titles of a sequel that he possibly could have come up with. If you're not familiar with Deadpool, he does exist from Marvel, but is not part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe yet. An R-rated superhero that says and does whatever he feels like it, whenever he feels like it. And his films reflect this and seek to subvert the superhero genre in any number of ways. And he is back after his mega hit in the first film, returns this one with kids on his mind, with him and his girlfriend, when a supervillain from the future named Cable first arrives and threatens their relationship together, as well as the future of the human race. Deadpool springs into action, forming his own team, his own super team, the X-Force. And for this week, we are so glad to have back the Right Honorable Peter Adorian. Welcome, Pete.
Thank you. That honorific was just made up, by the way. I have no political clout whatsoever.
Or honor.
Also true.
A reminder that this podcast will include spoilers. So if that's an issue for you, you may want to pause here, go back, watch the film, and come back and listen. But we need to be able to talk about the film as in-depth as we possibly can. And for that, we need no holds barred. But let's get right into it. Peter, what did you think of Deadpool 2?
I enjoyed the movie. Okay. I enjoyed the movie, and I had a fun time watching it. Obviously, with any sequel, you've got the original, like the first one, you know, in the back of your mind. But my basic theory on sequels is the people who like the sequel like the original more than the people who don't like the sequel. And that's kind of my take on sequels in general. Because people always say, oh, it wasn't as good as the first one.
Right.
But the people who do like the second one like the first one more than the people who say they didn't like the second one. Does that make sense?
It does, although I think that's a very lawyerific argument. I feel like in this particular case, though, of what you're saying, you're actually, you can make a bad sequel.
Of course.
You can make a bad sequel. You can like the first one and not like the second one. If you're suggesting that the people that like the second one like the first one, I don't know about that. Because how many times, I saw Jurassic Park and I absolutely loved it when I was a kid. Then I saw Lost World and I wanted to die a cruel death.
Yeah.
Like, it's a poorly made sequel.
But the people who like Lost World like Jurassic Park more than you like Jurassic Park. That's my argument.
Okay. You win, I guess.
So I like Deadpool too.
You liked it more. You like the original more than me. No.
And that means I like the original more than anybody who didn't like Deadpool too. But it wasn't as dynamic. It wasn't as narrow an issue where it's like, I'm just going to go fight the main bad guy. You know, everything's building up to that. It was a little bit more sprawling, amorphous. There were more focus on non-Deadpool characters in this one.
Yeah.
And just generally, it was a little bit slower even at parts. I don't know. But I enjoyed it. What did you think?
I thought it was really well done. Now, having said that, I think he fought his greatest supervillain yet, which was expectations from the audience.
Yes.
So it's interesting to say how I liked the film, because I think it was in many ways a better movie than the first.
Okay.
But the biggest thing the first movie had going for it was the element of surprise. Mm-hmm. And this film didn't have that opportunity. So now he ironically had to make more of a superhero movie than he did in the first one. The first one's a straight up satire of superhero films.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, I think Deadpool 2 is a really well-written film. You can see the moments where he checks the boxes from the first film, and that happens a lot in sequels, especially of comedies. Oh, you like this? So we're going to do this now.
Yeah.
You know, you can watch those movies. Make the X-Men joke. Make the Hugh Jackman joke. You know, do those things. So he checks the boxes, but he doesn't rely too heavily on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. I remember when, this is going back, this is me showing my age, when Austin Powers came out, it didn't do very well in the theater. So it's like the anti-Deadpool in that sense. But it was a complete satire of the James Bond films.
Yes.
When Austin Powers 2 came out, they basically dropped the Bond satire and focus in on Austin Powers.
Yeah.
And he's not a very interesting guy. And you see this problem, especially with sequels to comedies, right? Because, oh, you made fun of something first. And the first one, and the first Deadpool is a complete satire of superhero films. Like, he just lampoons the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, he starts to build on the franchise itself, which changes the way it's done. But he made a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that this one, I think, had a better story. It had some real character development for him. It gave you – the comedy was good. Like, it earned its jokes. I noticed that the R-rated factor was different this time. Actually, I want to hear what you think about this. One of the things I found was the first film marketed itself as a legitimate, like, quote, FU to PG-rated superhero films.
Yeah.
And part of the appeal was it broke the mold of PG-rated superhero films. This film was just an R-rated film. It wasn't really poking at it as much. There's no nudity in this one.
Right.
There's several scenes in the first one. The violence is just R-rated violence. I don't know. What do you think?
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about it that way. It's less in your face about it.
Yeah.
But also, I wonder how much of it is just me being desensitized to the R rating. You know, being somebody who watches a lot of, like, HBO shows and, like, you know, other R-rated films, I'm like, I'm still very sensitive to violence, but I just don't really notice a difference between R-rated violence and other violence sometimes.
Yeah, well, you know, to me, it's just violence is, like, in this case, is the violence isn't any different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, and one of the things I appreciate is they didn't try to just amp it up infinitely, even though he gets ripped in half at one point, but they don't just try to amp it up for the sake of amping it up. But in the first one, like, it's interesting, in the first film, it opens with him slicing and dicing people, and then he breaks the fourth wall, and he talks to the audience, and he says something akin to the fact that, you know, I brought my girlfriend to this because I just thought it was a superhero movie, and now he's impaled this guy like an effing kebab.
Yeah.
What the heck's going on here? And it's the whole point is like, yeah, now look what we finally did. And this one, they're just like, we're doing it now, which is fine.
Yeah.
I just thought it was different.
And, I mean, probably the best sequence in the movie is the very opening scene where you see the bad guy kind of running towards the camera, and in the background, Deadpool's just slicing and dicing everything.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But even there, like, I can't remember whether there was, like, Quentin Tarantino blood, like, you know, like, just squirting out of all the bodies as soon as he cuts them open. Yeah, in that opening sequence of number two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't remember how much blood there was, but it's like, I wasn't looking for it. Because I'm like, it's just going to be, whatever happens in this movie, it's just going to try and freak me out. That's it, right? It's going to try and push my boundaries, but...
But it didn't. That's the thing, is it?
Yeah, I mean, there were very few times in that movie where, like, my jaw dropped, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in the first one, like, I was really kind of, I don't know, like, they really were able to cash in on my inability, like, on the fact that I had never seen that on the screen before. And I read Deadpool comics.
But that's why I think surprise was so important in this one, in the first one, you see. And this time they didn't have that because everybody knew that went to see it what they were going to get.
Yeah.
That's actually a good launch point then, Pete. I was wondering, what do you think the appeal of Deadpool actually is? Like, is it that it subverts the genre? Is it the rating? Is it his attitude? What do you think his appeal is, and how does he fit into our cultural climate?
So there's two parts to that. I think the appeal that he has to me is that he is sort of the vehicle for satire of the Marvel universe. Mm. And that's why, that's really the only reason why I would have read the comic. I like that, you know, he's able to do things that we do all the time, like quote pop culture, right? Like, I mean, one of the best moments for me in reading the comics was when he would do things like just start singing Wu-Tang Clan while he was cutting people up, right? And I'm like, this is funny because he's like me. He listens to the same things I listen to. He doesn't live in this different universe. He knows the same things that I know, right? Mm-hmm. And that's very different than your usual comic book characters who seem to be like they exist in a vacuum.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know what's on TV. They don't listen to, you know, popular music. They're kind of just in like every town or like every big city, you know? It's harder to connect, right? But so that's why I like Deadpool. I think why other people like Deadpool is why they like that Logan movie is because it's violent and they want to see some like more like either realism, like violent, like realistic violence, or like obscene over the top violence that they just don't get in the regular Marvel universe and that they get in other places like in video games. Right. So that's kind of why I think people like it, but I'm a little cynical as you can see. Me cynical. I'm a little cynical. I think people like it because it appeals to their baser instincts, but I always liked it because it just felt more normal in some ways. I don't know. Why do you like it?
I'm in love with Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, yeah. No. Everybody in Canada is in love with Ryan Reynolds.
I'm really not. I've been watching this guy for 15, 20 years, and somebody's decided he would be a superstar, and they've been trying so hard until he made his own movie, and it was Deadpool, and then everyone fell in love with Ryan Reynolds. Now he's got those dashing looks.
So. Well, he already erased, in this movie, he erased that bad movie that he made about
Green Oh my Lantern. Gosh, yes. Okay, without question, just, I admit this is switching gears. The best part of that movie is the ending. And most people, when I tell them that too, they're like, well, that just sounds like it's a bad movie. I'm like, no, the ending is just that good.
Yeah.
You know? See, that was where I felt the wheels came off. That was when I felt like it felt like the first movie.
Yeah.
Because the wheels came off and it was just like he was free. And I don't just mean Deadpool. I mean Ryan Reynolds was free to do whatever he wanted by time traveling, by doing – although ironically – he wasn't free to do everything because I had to cut a sequence. I don't know. You heard about that? They actually cut a sequence where he time traveled because they make a joke in the film about him killing Hitler.
Mm.
So there was a scene that they shot. They even shot it of him going back to the birth of Hitler, killing him as a child, as a newborn infant. And it got voted down by test screening audiences. I can't imagine why.
Wow. Killing a,
you want to talk about breaking rules.
Wow.
Well, the innocent Hitler at that point, if you will, newborn, and he kills him. He chokes him to death or something, and so they cut it. It was one of those post-credit tags.
Bizarre.
Even
in Futurama, there's that episode where, like, in one of the later seasons, maybe in the last season, where they have a time machine, and Farnsworth kills Hitler.
Yes, but if you know, it wasn't that it was Hitler that they had a problem with. It was that he was still a baby.
Right.
That was the thing.
Right.
Go back, kill Hitler. People laugh.
Yeah.
Go back, kill baby Hitler. That's what I mean. Quote unquote, innocent Hitler who's just come out of the mother's womb.
Yeah. Back when they called him Adolf.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So that was cut. And they focused in on more lampooning of the Ryan Reynolds, Hugh Jackman, you know, the Deadpool. That, oh my gosh.
That was perfect.
It was so good.
Yeah.
So good.
You're welcome, Canada.
Yeah, I mean, come on, Americans. You got to love Canada now because we gave you Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
We let you borrow him. And
have you seen him in a serious movie?
Depends on what you define as serious.
Like not a comedy? Like
I've seen Ryan Reynolds in movies that are not comedies, and they still somehow end up comedies because he's Ryan Reynolds.
So then you haven't seen The Captive?
No. No, I haven't.
That movie is not funny. That movie is terrifying.
That was the kidnapping movie he did a couple years back.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was Atom Egoyan. So, like, real psychological, like, it just messes you up watching it.
Kind of like Deadpool.
In a different way. Like, yeah, it's also set in Canada and whatever. It's really cool if you want to see Ryan Reynolds in a serious role. But this movie certainly not serious in any way, shape, or form.
Well, you know what? There was another. This is going back, man. This is going back. 2003. Foolproof.
Okay.
Foolproof. It's a Canadian heist movie. It's actually pretty good. There's nobody else in there. Unless you're Canadian, you might recognize David Suchet, but the rest of them, they're all like... He's that guy you go, I've seen him, but where have I seen him before?
Yeah.
You know, this is a pretty good heist movie, man. It October 2003.
Wow.
Foolproof.
It's like the Canadian Ocean's 11?
Yes. So it's just like Ocean's 3. And anyway. But, yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like, you know, what's the appeal of Deadpool to me? I'm honestly not entirely sure. I love satire. Mm-hmm. I love legitimate satire.
Yeah.
And that was why I love the first Austin Powers. That was why I love the first Anchorman. I actually kind of like the second Anchorman too, but I love the first Deadpool for legitimate satire. It knew what it was. It broke the rules it wanted to break.
Yeah.
And to me, I remember when the first one came out and I knew about all the R-rated and I'm like, why am I more concerned about this than any other R-rated film personally? To me, the marketing was almost like 50 Shades of Grey. It's like, don't worry, this is the cool thing about this movie. Like 50 Shades of Grey markets itself as, don't worry, the cool thing is about the dirty sex,
which, yeah,
you know, that's the thing that you're selling it. It's not that there is that in it. It's that this is why you want to see it.
Right.
But it was really well written and it caught me by surprise. This one too, really well written, mm-hmm. entertaining, good satire, but now I feel that's why I think it's sort of slipping more into superhero genre because it's moving that way. But from a cultural perspective, I mean, honestly, I'm not sure. But the thing I keep coming back through is angst and anger. Mm. Like, does Deadpool succeed at the height of the Obama era? Maybe. But Deadpool is only 2 years old now, and that comes out during the election, you know, or right before the election. So yeah. People think there's an angst and anxiety in culture that has really been heightened. Maybe or maybe not. Now, this one had a huge drop-off in the second week, and they've said that that's a problem, but it also isn't because it was up against Solo. Solo's got the bigger problem.
Yeah.
And the first one came out in February, so it had no competition. So yeah. They dropped this into a summer blockbuster, and it did really well the opening weekend. Mm-hmm. But I do think that part of the appeal of Deadpool is that his character is free from social constraints. Hmm. Although, ironically, in this one, he seems to want some social constraints because he wants the kids. He wants the traditional life. He wants that relationship. So I don't know. I feel like Deadpool, from a cultural standpoint, is touching on the fact that you all know the rules. I am free to somehow get around those things. And you're angry, and I'm going to give the finger to this sort of thing. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I thought it was actually a bit of a safer movie than maybe what you're thinking of. One of the criticisms of it that I read was that, you know, Deadpool is supposed to be this genre-busting kind of character, but they wrote in one of the most typical genre things, which I didn't pick it up when I saw it, but as you'll realize, it's because probably of my gender. His whole motivation in that film is because of his, you know, the woman that he loves is dead, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. That's
a Christopher Nolan film.
Yeah. But that's a big cliche in films where women are just props to make men, like to give men a reason to do something. Okay. And so
okay.
The criticism was, this is supposed to be this sort of, you know, social commentary kind of movie, but it's still falling into some of those old tropes. And I thought about that and I thought, well, did that make it less of a shocking kind of film? Maybe not, but it's a fair criticism that really it wasn't as mind blowing or as barrier breaking as maybe we might make it out to be, in that it still falls into those old tropes.
When you describe that, though, it almost sounds like Ness's character is merely the motivation. You could argue that, I suppose, from a certain perspective, but I feel like the women characters in this were very, very strong. And Ness's character is critical to his development throughout the film, even after her death and eventual resurrection. Yes, it's a motivating factor, because Deadpool's a revenge movie. Otherwise, why would he go on a slaughtering killing spree? But I would suggest that her role in it provides almost mentorship to Deadpool the entire time. And Domino is a suitable sister-like character, as well as Blind Al, who's in it less in this one, but I love Blind Al.
Sure, but none of those characters have an arc.
Nessa's does. Nessa does. You don't think she has an arc?
I don't think she has an arc.
I guess she doesn't change. You're right, in that sense. But see, I would argue that it provides the emotional stability to the film. But no, I mean, I see what you're saying. So, okay, if the issue is that she doesn't have her own character arc, Domino certainly does not. You're right. She has no character arc, so that's true. But, I don't know, Nessa's character is so essential to... I see her growth and his growth and development as tied in so closely in their relationship that I don't know.
But the relationship is just a prop for the movie.
Maybe.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, I see what
that's,
you mean.
That's a criticism. It's not that she's not important to the movie. It's that she's important only as an object and not as a subject of the movie.
No, that's true. Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Even their relationship is not really the subject of the movie so much as revenge is the subject, right?
Yeah, yeah, no, I can see that. I can see that.
I mean, that's not a reason to hate the movie. Don't get
me wrong. No.
It's just a comment on how it's not as groundbreaking, earth-shattering as maybe some people hoped it would have been.
I read an article, I think it was in the Toronto Star, that actually compared the women in this film to his id, ego, and superego.
Oh.
Which was really interesting, because I thought that was better depicted in the first film. But Nessa is almost his superego binding force. And to be fair, and this is not an excuse for no character arc, I guess, in that case, which I see your argument there. The film is called Deadpool, so it's focusing on the psychology of him alone.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting when they bring him back in X-Force, how that shifts his character, because he can't be the movie anymore. It's like when Iron Man went to Avengers. So, when you watched Iron Man, though, how did you feel about, say, Pepper? Is Pepper sort of still that character? Maybe, because she doesn't have much of a character arc either, except for the third movie, you could make that argument, but...
Yeah.
Maybe not. I don't know. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that... Because I was so impressed by the female characters in this role. Also the fact that because there was no nudity, there was no exploitation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I just think that we could say that it's breaking some barriers, but just not all of them.
Yep, that's fair. Fair argument.
If this is the worst crime of the movie in terms of gender, I mean, maybe it doesn't pass the Bechdel test. I didn't really think of that. But
oh my gosh, it can't pass the Bechdel test. It absolutely did not pass the Bechdel test.
There aren't enough women in it. But.
No, I hate this movie, Pete. I liked Deadpool until now. Jeez. I liked it better than I liked Infinity War. And
just for the benefit of the listener, the Bechdel test is if two female characters in the film have a conversation about anything other than a man. For 2 minutes or more? Okay.
I think that's how it works. I don't think there are two women in the same room together in this particular film at any point other than when Domino shows up and is standing in the room with Big Al. Not Big Al. Blind Al. With Blind Al.
Yeah.
Or
I guess Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
You're right. Oh, that's true.
And her girlfriend.
That's right. I forgot about them. But they're hardly in the film.
No, they're hardly in it at all.
And all that her girlfriend says was, "Hi, Deadpool." It's hello. Yeah.
Hi, Wade.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of it before, but yeah, you're right.
So I guess the other question that we had about this film is what does it actually make a commentary on? Like, what social commentary is it making?
Yeah, that's a good question to me. Certainly family is a key film, but I don't know if it's a social commentary on family. I was calling the film Dadpool when I came out of it, yeah. Because that's now I want kids. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But, well, why don't you start us off? What do you think?
Well, I guess family is one of the big themes, the idea of people choosing their own family.
Yes, that's true. That is absolutely the case. Yeah.
And I think chosen family is a bit of a social phenomenon today that maybe it wasn't 20 years ago.
Hmm.
But the idea of chosen family is people forming their closest relationships around people who they're not related to and choosing to exist in those close relationships, like for the same reasons that we would rely on family, instead relying on friends, relying on people of the same, social demographic as you, or, you know, people that you were really close to that you went to high school with, even like your roommates, with, you know, less people getting married or being in long-term relationships. Roommates have become sort of a chosen family, and you treat your roommates to the same way that you would as, you know, living with your roommates into your 30s and 40s sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this film touches on that with Colossus inviting Deadpool, you know,
To join the X-Men
over and over again. We can be like your family. We can give you that support you need. We can help you achieve your goals. You can help us. Like, we'll be a family, right? And he's like, no, I don't want to be part of your lame family. And he's really against it, right?
That's true.
Yeah. And despite the fact that he's so against it, he meets other people in the film who he feels that close relationship with, like the young man, whose name I now also forget.
Who, Cable?
No, the kid.
Oh, the kid. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, stupid. Russell.
Russell.
There you go.
He really connects with Russell for some reason, right? And it kind of comes, that's the whole Nessa thing, right?
That's true.
The prophetic voice is, you know, and the whole discussion about children up front kind of gives Deadpool this reason to kind of connect with Russell, right? Even though he's trying against it so hard.
Yeah.
And he wants to be, I mean, he kind of is styling himself as like, hey, like everybody around me gets hurt. Like, you know, don't be around me. There's a whole connection to the Logan movie with Logan saying the same thing about X-23. That's what I was trying to say. The whole thing about Logan trying to, you know, avoid that connection with X-23 in the Logan movie, that same thing is happening in Deadpool. Hmm. He's trying to avoid that connection. He's like, leave me alone. I'm just dying of cancer. I'm just going to disappoint you, you know. And then he just finds that connection and goes back to it. And by the end of the movie, you have this X-Force that is, you know, become like a chosen family. And while he's dying, he's looking at them and is like, you guys are like my family, you know. I don't know if he actually says, you're my family. He does use the word family in the context of the people who are standing him around him while he's dying. And, like, the idea that he and Cable kind of come around to this notion of, like, opening yourself up to these people who are not actually your family to save them.
Yeah.
Even Cable's whole thing is, I need to save my blood family from the future, right?
That's true. That's true, yeah.
And then he says, you know what? Maybe at the end, he kind of comes around saying, maybe saving this kid is also worth it, even though he's not one of our family members.
Yeah, it's an interesting look to see how relationships shift throughout this because, you know, two of the stories you noted are people that end up ditching their family for Deadpool.
Yeah.
Because Colossus, I know he's still an X-Men, but he leaves the X-Men. They just walk away to join this rogue guy because he likes him. Cable actually says, I'm going to stick around for a while. Now, I know it's because he's leader of the X-Force.
Yeah.
But you just, my family's fine. Really? Yeah. You good now, Cable? I guess if you're a time traveler, you can leave and come back 30 seconds after you've left. So it's all fine and dandy. Well, I just figured the guy'd be a little more urgent to get back to his kids and his wife, you know. But you're right about chosen family. I talk about this with the youth too, about the idea that chosen family is such. I wouldn't say it's a recent phenomenon, but it's a much more common recent phenomenon. Like you say, it's shifting, it's moving.
Yeah.
And one of the things I thought was interesting about this is what drew them together was mission. But Deadpool tried to falsify that by creating his own X-Force, and it doesn't work. He creates the wrong teams,
yeah,
you know? And what ends up happening is he ends up forming a team with the people that he's already with. You know, he tries to walk. There's all this sort of walking away and trying and builds. But he's already got those relationships. He just doesn't want to acknowledge them.
Yeah.
Which I see. What I do like is stuff like when he's standing out front of the mansion and he's got the little iPhone.
Yeah.
From Say Anything. Yeah. I'm like, that's so good. See, that's the stuff I like. But this family forms because they are united in mission.
Mm-hmm.
That draws them together. The part with Nessa, though, is interesting as well because it's still that nuclear family that he wants at the same time. So there is still a justification of that at the same time. I think it's a positive view of family. I don't think it's a destructive view of family because I think this is actually I don't want to say family film, but in many ways, this particular sequel is an emphasis on family. They've taken that R-rated stuff and all the appeal of the first movie, and I think this is why where it differs. The first movie was all about, look at how crazy we can be. This one is, we're already crazy, but we want something more conventional as well.
Hmm.
And I sort of thought that was an interesting twist and showed growth in his character. But, you know, the interesting thing, too, and this is where I'm a pastor. I'm not trying to force this, but this is just what I see.
Uh-huh.
Like all the marketing of Deadpool has been focused on a religious aspect.
Yeah.
You know, it's with a bit of a twist, you know, the second coming obviously has its double entendre.
Yeah.
But he's got his arms out in a Christ pose.
Yeah.
And it's a deliberate religious connotation. The other primary poster is Cable reaching out, the creation of Adam.
Yeah.
Cable, this godlike figure, humanity resisting this change. And I hate to say it, but there's multiple times when he refers to himself in this movie as Jesus.
Yeah.
Multiple. I'm not just like imagining it. He refers to himself as their film's bigger than Passion of the Christ.
Yeah.
He actually says to them that they've been chosen by a higher power and Domino looks at Cable and says, did he just call himself God?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
The Lord works in mysterious ways.
That's right.
Don't I?
Yeah.
even with the cursing in parts, like when he's talking to Colossus and Colossus telling him how to be selfless, he goes, selfless, what does that mean? And Colossus goes, Jesus Christ,
yeah.
You know, as a curse. Promise me you'll start judging people not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, man, they're going for this comparison. So my question is, I guess, what is Deadpool trying to save us from in this movie? They're making these comparisons and heightening up. Why these comparisons? Why make him like this? Is it just that he's trying to save us from convention? Is it just that he's trying to save us from quote-unquote rules? Because, like you said, the X-Men are kind of lame in this. Colossus has his lame rules.
Yeah.
And who is the villain? The almost the residential school-esque type of environment that Russell stems from.
Yeah.
And his tagline is basically warped scripture. Blessed are the wicked who are healed from my hand.
Yeah.
So what is the connection here? There is a heavy religious emphasis in this film.
Let's just pretend for a moment that the movie was written by a Christian. I'm assuming that it wasn't.
I think it's written by the same guy, but I could be wrong, actually. I don't know if it's written by the same guy.
But imagine for a moment, just as a thought exercise, that it was written by a Christian. What do you think that the movie would mean if you knew that the writer was a believer?
Well, I think it'd be God's Not Dead 4. God's not dead. He just resurrects. He's swearing on the outside. Sorry. Sorry, Christian culture joke.
The reason I asked the question is I think if you wanted to say that it had meaning because it came from a believer's standpoint, you might say, well, they're trying to detach Christianity from that like residential school conversion therapy, you know, Bible bashing kind of mentality. And they're trying to set up a vision of Christianity that's different, right? Now, I don't think they actually set up a vision of Christianity that's different. I think it's just a lot of God talk without the substance that you would see if it was written by a Christian person who wanted to have this, you know, more, I guess, more modern or contemporary concept of Christianity detached from those old kind of, you know, I mean, legitimately bad things that we did,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that we continue to do. But again, going back to the fact that it's probably not written by a Christian, I don't know that there was much purpose in it other than to just basically take a crap on the very obviously bad things, like, again, conversion therapy,
it's true.
This, you know, residential school type setup. There's a real emphasis on just saying that these things that are plainly and obviously wrong are wrong. And I'm like, well, don't we kind of all agree that those things are wrong? Maybe there are, you know, there are several people in society who would think that these things are not okay, but I don't think they're the ones who are watching the movie, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
So it kind of beats up a bit on things that we all think are wrong. Like even his thing about racism, right?
Mm.
He keeps calling Cable a racist. And he's like we all kind of get that racism is wrong, you know? He's not really making a statement on any controversial issues, just on issues
that
we basically already agree on. And so the sort of social sins and the social commentary that attacks it is a little weak. So if there was this sort of grander purpose to, you know, having him as a Christ-like figure, it's lost on me.
I just think it's so interesting that that's the tone of the marketing.
Yeah.
You know, like they could have gone anywhere with gross out humor. They could have called it Deadpool number 2.
Yeah.
You know, they could have done all sorts of things. They could have done anything, but they chose this recurring theme. And now, again, maybe I'm more sensitive to it as a pastor. I'm not even offended by it. I just think it's fascinating.
Yeah.
I think you've made some great points, though, on social convention, because the irony is, too, and this is the irony about Deadpool, is that he subverts the genre of superhero films, but also, also lives by them.
Yeah.
You know, these morals that, you know, he's trying to save people from, you're right, they're obvious morals. They're obvious. Conversion therapy is obviously a wrong thing. And sure, you could say that it's that you could take a target as a religious target, if you will, on this one. But man, I just think that in this case, he's still, even though he breaks this and lives by his own quote moral standard, still lives under this moral code, which seems to be objective in some time. It's really interesting in a lot of ways. I tend to think that maybe the comparison is just the resurrection tie, like, because he continuously keeps coming back from the dead.
Probably.
And he seems to have this power, this godlike ability now to change time and whatnot. So you could look at it strictly from that sense. It's a fascinating way to market the movie for me. Like, I really want that poster of
especially of in an age of biblical literacy at an all-time low.
I'm just saying. It's... But yet, everything he does and everything he talks about are pretty obvious cultural things. I loved when he talked about Passion of the Christ. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, we're bigger than Jesus or something like that. Yeah. And he's like, no, really. We beat them in Japan or something like that.
Well, that's a John Lennon quote, right?
That's true. More popular than Jesus. Jesus. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's one other thing in relation to this sort of godlike ability. It almost reminded me sort of Greek mythology, because a godlike character is like us.
Mm.
Like, it is, you know, that's what you saw in characters like Zeus and all the other. They were so flawed all the time, you know. They were doing terrible things.
Yeah.
But that made, that humanized them more and put them more in the image of the people at that time.
Yeah.
I feel like Deadpool sort of falls under that marker, is this idea to subvert the idea that these heroes live by these grand codes and take him who has great power but spits on great responsibility in some ways. But in this one, he takes it. See, this one, I go back and forth on this one.
There's a lot of good work out there, actually. Like, a lot of good comparisons drawn between superheroes and, like, superhero canons and mythology.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of great work. And I think that, like, Deadpool is kind of a bit of a Loki.
Yeah.
You know, and Loki, despite also being a comic book character in the Marvel Universe, is is chaotic in a different way than Deadpool. To use the Dungeons and Dragons terminology, Deadpool is chaotic neutral. You just never know what he's going to do. He might attack the good guys. He might attack the bad guys. There's a whole Deadpool comic dedicated to Deadpool killing everybody in the Marvel universe, like including all the good guys, all the heroes. And I think that would be a cool, you know, plot for any subsequent Deadpool movie, Ryan Reynolds, if you're listening. But he's chaotic and still has that sort of everyday normal humanity.
Yeah.
Where he's sitting at a bar and talking to his bartender. He's talking to his to his wife about having a kid. Like, these are things that we all do, right?
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
So
I like that you talk about him being more human in some ways like that. You talk about how when you read the comic, the appeal is he's like you. He knows the same things. He lives in the same world. It's interesting. Speaking of being in the same world, though, too, you know, talk about the moral high ground of conversion therapy.
Yeah.
That's very X-Men universe.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the Big original time. Two X-Men movies, and the first one is sort of this tone of racism, and then the second one they shift it towards oppression of homosexuals. Like, it's still very X-Men universe in and of itself. It just takes it up to the next level.
Well, X-Men overall is the perfect vehicle for like any kind of civil rights discussion.
Oh, yeah, for
because
sure.
You have an other, right?
Yeah.
And having any kind of, like, the X-Men can be a stand-in for any kind of person that's or group that's being othered in society. Deadpool in this movie has the othering aspect, as you say, with the conversion therapy type situation that's going on for Russell. But there, I mean, maybe you disagree with me, but I think there was a missed opportunity to talk about things that were maybe more pressing social issues than that. I mean, the big ones that I think of right now are rights for transgendered people, like the bathroom issue.
Yeah.
Right. That's an ongoing thing in the U.S. Despite, it doesn't matter who the president is. It just, you know, that's an ongoing thing at the state level. I'm a lawyer and I do a lot of court watching, and in the U.S. right now, that's being litigated in every state, right?
Hmm.
And it was at the time that they were writing this movie, too. The other one, and I mean, I think this is a real missed opportunity, is to talk about, like, school shootings and violence like
that. Oh my gosh, you're right. I never thought of that, because that's actually what happens in this is, wow.
He goes and attacks a school.
Right? I never thought of it that way. You're absolutely right.
And there wasn't, like, it was such a missed opportunity to talk about the anger that people feel who would go and do that thing. Or even the broader conversation about, like, having access to the weapons and the machinery to do that.
I think that's broader. That's more difficult. I think they'd wrestled with that a little bit with Russell.
A little bit.
I think as you get into the psyche of Russell, of why he wants that school to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, they still have the positive school with Xavier's school. So they're still a good example of a safe place.
Yeah.
And that place, I think, but yeah, you're right. Though here would be my argument on that, is that I don't know if Deadpool, the franchise, wants to deal with social issues officially. I'm not sure. That's an X-Men universe thing. They want to tackle social issues.
Sure.
My argument is that this places them in a world where social issues are occurring, but it's not trying to offer commentary on it per se, on those particular things. Because, or maybe it isn't yet. So I don't know. It's not that I disagree that it's a missed opportunity. What I would argue is that maybe they didn't want to take that opportunity.
Yeah, and I think, in X-Men, you would have a more serious discussion about it. In Deadpool, you could just lampoon it, right? You could just say...
That's true.
Like, there wasn't, like, you could joke about the NRA and just talk about how they're stupid.
But you
like,
see, there's danger in that. There's danger in that, because that humor would go over like a lead balloon. This is the danger of something like Deadpool. The things that you want to push for them to lampoon, you can't and make money. or can you in that? I don't know.
If you can't and make money, then I don't want to see any other Deadpool movies, because they're not as, if it's about money, then it's not really as subversive and genre-breaking as it could be, right? Like, because as soon as you go down that line, it's like, well, I only want to watch now, like, independent films that lampoon superheroes, right? Which, I mean, anybody can go and do, but I wanted more out of that film as a Hollywood film. I know that I can go see better social commentaries also.
Agreed,
but as a Hollywood film, I wanted more out of it. in a way that only Deadpool could do. And again, having a serious conversation about it in X-Men would be great.
Mm.
But having a more like raunchy, aggressive,
R-rated conversation.
Yeah, even just irreverent conversation about it. Missed opportunity is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I feel like with these films, what they've done is they've just been taking it as a rejection of the dominant culture. You know, especially like the superhero genre is the new pop music, right? Like,
yeah.
Everybody knows the tropes. But that's an interesting, that gives me pause to think about this film more, actually, because I hadn't thought of it from that perspective. Now you've got the microphone, Ryan Reynolds. So what do you want Deadpool to be? And I would still want, I hope X-Force is good. They said they have no official plans for a third one because once they did the first one, X-Force is Deadpool 3. I want to see Deadpool 3. I want to see Peter back in the X-Force. Best part of that movie. Best cameo. I love it.
That was great.
Did you know that Matt Damon's in that movie too?
No.
He's one of the two Hicks. I forgot the two Hicks were. One of them was Matt Damon.
Really?
Yeah, when Cable steals their truck, one of them's Matt Damon. Yeah. That's Brad amazing. Pitt, Matt Damon. There was someone else too. I can't remember who it was. It's good.
I love when Peter at the end kind of just asks for Domino's number. Or email. A strange guy.
Honestly, that X-Force scene was brilliant.
Yeah.
Across the board. It was so good.
Yeah.
And just while I see him standing by, I was like, no, 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 don't. No. Oh, man. Oh, no. Yeah. No. He's sort of watching them die one by one. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
See, that writing was on point. That writing was on point.
Yeah. That's a Futurama quote from Nixon. This is what we trained for all yesterday afternoon.
On that note, we should do Screen It or Skip It. Peter, Deadpool 2, Screen It or Skip It.
Screen it. It was worth watching. It was fun. It was funny. There are some jokes in there that, like, they set up at the very beginning of the movie and they don't pay off until the very end.
Yes.
Like the Cher thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Totally screen it.
Yeah, I got to give it a screen it. It's Deadpool, so if you're not a fan of that style of movie, then don't screen it. But I'm telling you, it's well written. It is violent, but it is funny. And the characters, everybody does a great job. I even love the fact that he calls Cable Thanos at one point.
Yeah.
Josh Brolin has had a very, very profitable month of April and May.
Yeah.
But it is a well-done superhero sequel with a heart that maintains the humor and is well-written. It deserves some love at the box office. I believe that. Peter, thank you so much for coming on. I love chatting with you. I actually completely forgot that your first one was Logan until you mentioned about watching Logan. You were on for that.
I was on for Logan.
I forgot. I feel like this comes together even more so now.
Go back, dear reader or dear listener, and listen to Logan. It's about 20 episodes ago.
I think it's on the website. It isn't on the isn't online anymore, but it's on the website.
Yeah.
But if you're at home, of course, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, SoundCloud, Piggly Pie, Mazel Tov, Hufflepuff, you know, all those podcast sites, if you will. If you go to the Screenfish website, you can download Fishing for More on the podcast page, which is questions that you can have with people that you see the film with after you do. And we will be back next week to talk about Solo. Then we will be caught up. We'll be talking about the one of the more divisive films in the Star Wars franchise, as it has become known as.
Yep.
And yeah,
I'm going to see it next week. Very excited. If I might quickly just plug my my little side hustle.
Of course, go ahead.
If you're so inclined, check out the Geek Orthodox podcast, on which I have a small role to play on the Westworld minisodes. If you're into Westworld, we break down all the episodes and talk about them, talk about the themes. It's another sort of Christ and culture kind of podcast, just like this. So if you are so inclined, please do check out Geek Orthodox, again, on all the various podcasting platforms.
Cool. Absolutely. Listen to that. I'll make sure that I tag that on the podcast page as
much
well.
Much appreciated.
So people, you'll get both of our listeners to come and give you a check it out.
Excellent.
Thanks again, man. I love chatting with you. So much fun. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.